This is Amy Poehler. My new movie, Disney and Pixar's Inside Out 2, is coming to theaters June 14th, and it's making me feel joy and sadness and anger, definitely some disgust,
Rose,
and I think a little fear. But I'm also feeling these new emotions like anxiety, embarrassment, envy, and ennui.
It's what you call the boredom.
Okay, that one was weird. It's going to be the feel-everything movie of the summer. Disney and Pixar's Inside Out 2, rated PG. Parental guidance suggested. Only in theaters June 14. Get tickets now.
You guys, welcome to episode 102 of The Smush Room, the podcast that deep dives into well-known and, more importantly, not-so-well-known hookups of your favorite reality TV stars. It's me, Troy McGeady. And I'm really super excited because I'm doing a thing today that I've never done before. First of all, I'm going to introduce my guest, who I'm very, very fucking excited about. Rosie, hi, how are you?
Hi, thanks for having me on.
I'm so excited. So, first of all, you and I, you're like my guinea pig.
Oh, I like that. You know, I have a hamster.
You're my hamster slash guinea pig because this is my first fictional couple episode. I mentioned like last week and a couple weeks ago in the mailbag episode that I was going to start doing these every other week. And you're the first person that I'm recording one with. And I'm super excited.
I was terrified someone was going to take this from me. I honestly, as though like given instructions from God, like ran to your DMs with this one, so scared that somebody had already backseat it.
You know what's so funny? I was so nervous about doing this, like switching up the concept and like adding these fictional couples. And the minute I posted on Instagram that I wanted to do it, like people were like ready with the couple that they wanted to talk about. Like they had been waiting for it. So like it seems like this is like a thing that people like are very open to. And I'm excited about it.
Oh, good, good. I'm really excited about it.
And you also, so just to give people like a backstory, you're the host of a podcast that I think is like the coolest concept for a podcast that I've ever heard called Bitch History. Do you want to tell people about what it's about? Huh?
Yeah. So it's called It's History Bitch, like Britney.
Yeah.
and basically we just tell stories from history that are kind of stuck in our heads, you know, those stories that are like kind of like gossipy but from the Victorian era, and we just retell those stories, and then we like play a random game at the beginning, mm-hmm. and we just kind of, you know, shoot the shit. It's good fun.
When I listened to it, it was like, to me, the concept of your podcast is like if Us Weekly and like, you know, all of those magazines existed during that time, like this is what it would be.
That's what we're going for.
Like it's literally a gossip podcast about like the Victorian era. It's wild.
That's all I want. I just want to gossip about which women are like scarlet ladies and, you know, who has syphilis. That's all I want to talk about.
And like, that was such a Wild West time that things like people, it's like, it was so crazy and buck and wild.
Everyone was doing, people were wild back in the olden days.
Yeah.
Like everyone was starting a cult. Everyone was coming up with some mad invention. People were just, people were insane, having like secret lives. Everyone was heisting everything. I'm obsessed.
Well, I really suggest if you're listening to this podcast that you listen to it because it's really good. It's like this, except like it's like cool Victorian stuff that you would never know. Like the stuff that I talk about is stuff that if you like did a quick Google search, you could probably find that Lindsay Lohan had cocaine in her shoe at a fashion show in 2008 or whatever. But like this stuff is stuff that you could go through your whole life never knowing, and it's like really just, it's awesome.
Thanks so much. I mean, I promise you, all I did was a quick Google search, but yeah. I really appreciate that. Thank you.
Well, so you and I are going to be talking today about a couple that I think is a really good, like, starting off point for this format of whatever we're doing. We're talking about Ross and Rachel today.
We are talking about, I mean, I get chills just even at the mere mention.
So what's your relationship to Friends?
So my relationship to Friends, I'm a little bit of a baby. I was born in 93.
Okay.
So Friends was already a thing when I was growing up, and I would watch it on VHS. My sister is 15 years older than me.
Okay.
So she was like perfect Friends era, or like age. And so I would watch it and not really, I remember watching the scene where Monica does the numbers and, you know, she's like basically like acts out an orgasm, but yeah. Me thinking it was so funny because Monica was doing funny voices.
Yeah,
I just had no like concept. So much of it just went right over my head, but I just loved it. And me and my friends would watch it, and I must have been like 7, and I then watched it religiously as a teenager on Comedy Central, out of order.
Yeah.
And then that was like something that I just kind of, it became this really comforting thing. Like Friends to me is comfort.
Yeah.
I want to laugh and feel homely.
Yeah. It's very like the beats are, you recognize the beats and like the joke. It just feels safe. I get it.
Yeah. It feels really like I did 10 weeks actually living in America and working in America. And even though Friends is American, to feel at home, I watched Friends.
Yeah.
Because it just like reminded me of home, I guess, somehow.
Yeah. I get that. I completely understand that. I'm always really fascinated by people's relationship to this show that are like a little bit younger, just because it really details like the power of not even really so much streaming, but like syndication.
Yeah.
Like Friends is a show that has like really, I mean, shows like Friends and Seinfeld and like, you know, Roseanne before recently, you know, shows that like people really, like no matter what age they are, have discovered through like just being syndicated. People have such a strong, I don't know, people just have such a strong emotional reaction to this show.
It's because it's funny, but it is so wholesome, really.
It is.
It's about love and friendship and kindness and silliness, and they're all adults, but they're all children in a way. They're learning to be adults.
Yeah, they are, like they're like kids. Like you're watching people not want to give in to being adults, and it's like there's something that's like almost like relatable about that.
Yeah,
that they live in this like this weird like strange world where they're not really like 30-year-olds.
Exactly, and because I think they are what 30 began to look like.
That's so true. Yeah,
looks like now. Like I was watching the episode that we watched for this, and I was like, oh, thank God! Like I'm 25. They also didn't have it figured out at 25. Like yeah.
That's such a good point.
And this is like 15 years later or 20 years later.
This really is what adulthood looks like now in 2019. Like this is like one of the first shows to like really delve into that. Cause I do remember being younger and watching this and thinking like, they're really silly for being old. You know what I mean? Like I was like, this is so weird. Like people their age on other TV shows are way more figured out than they are. They're like teenagers.
But, yeah. I think I remember thinking that I thought they were a lot younger when I was a child. Cause I remember my sister, so you learn to drive here when, like, you can learn to drive here when you're 17. Mm-hmm. And my sister didn't learn until she was 21. And me thinking, God, that is so embarrassing. How do you go around calling yourself an adult when you can't even drive? And she was 21. Like, here, you don't really need to drive.
Right.
So.
Yeah. It's like your idea of adulthood is so, like, what makes an adult is so simple. Yeah, like, you don't have a job. That's what adults have. Hello?
Yes, exactly. What do you mean? Like, what do you mean you don't know what you want to do? Or, like, what? And because they're all start, like, it's they're kind of a bit more in the middle. Like, Ross was married. Rachel was going to get married and then is starting again.
Yeah.
Really, like, they don't seem to know what they want to do for the first, like, 2 series. And that's really nice.
Yeah, and I guess this would be a good time to, because I haven't even really like gone into how I'm formatting these episodes really for like the people listening. Yeah. So I decided that when I first thought that I wanted to do this, I was like, oh, like I'll just go through and talk about the couple as a whole throughout the whole series, And you know, like, it's very easy for me to fall into a crazy Rain Man trapped in my apartment for 4 days like, rabbit hole. And I was like, actually, it probably would be a better idea to just pick, like, an episode that really encompasses, like, their whole relationship and, like, for better or for worse or whatever. And to really just kind of, like, break that down and then kind of talk around it. And so we chose the episode today where Ross and Rachel, like, have their iconic kiss moment. Like, probably one of the most iconic moments in television history where they finally kiss.
I think so. I think, although they do actually kiss before this.
Yeah.
In Rachel's, like, mind. But it just doesn't have that same, like, oomph to it.
Don't they kiss in the laundry room? They have, like, a peck.
Oh, yes, they have that peck.
But it's not, like, a real...
No.
You know? No. This is the first, like, kiss. Like, the moment that they really baited the audience with and... You know, it's just interesting. Like, we'll get into this. I mean, we can get into it now, but, like, it's just fascinating because their relationship was sort of like the will they, won't they was the whole sort of, it was the basis of this whole show, really. It was like, will they end up together? Will they date? Or will they move on? And they, for 10 years, kept us kind of wavering back and forth and wondering and obsessing over it and being frustrated by it and crying about it and laughing about it. I mean, we were really, like, hardcore invested in Ross and Rachel.
Because I think, what was your relationship with it? Like, how, because I wasn't in the zeitgeist of it actually happening as it was happening. Was that something you were, like, invested in at the time?
So I had a friend's family, like my family, I grew up with my family watching Friends. So, like, even as a kid, I watched it from the beginning, even when I was, like, way too young to be watching it. And not that it was, like, inappropriate, but, like, I just didn't understand a lot of the stuff that was happening, but I thought it was funny.
Yeah, same.
And I remember being young and really liking, Friends is a very, like, physical comedy show. Mm-hmm. So, like, my moments, I remember, like, being little and, like, the moments that really would have me, like, truly keeled over, like, holding my guts laughing was them, like, jumping on each other's backs or Monica putting the turkey on her head or, like, just stuff like that was, like, to me, that was true, like, comedy gold. So, yeah, like, I grew up watching the show. I watched it while it was on TV. And I was, like, I was a hardcore Friends obsessive. I was a stan. I, like, loved it. And then after it ended, I'll be honest with you, for me, Friends was never a show that, like, I stuck with after it ended. Like, I'm not one of those people that watches it all the time now.
Yeah.
I don't know why. It just wasn't, like, a thing that, like, I watch Seinfeld a lot still, and I watch The Simpsons almost every day. But Friends is just not one of those shows that I ended up watching, like, continuously throughout my entire life, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, parts of it really haven't aged well.
Yeah.
Like, the whole, like, any of their references to people being gay is just always...
It's all so uncomfortable.
It's so uncomfortable, and, yeah, and then the Monica storyline with when she was younger.
Yeah, yeah.
Any of that, you just... It really is uncomfortable to watch.
It is.
But then I'm one of those terrible people that can just be like, well, I'll skip that episode and then give them my money.
Well, you know, it's like, it's the thing about TV shows is that they're like a time capsule, you know? And it's like, doesn't mean that it's right, but it's like just a sign of where we were at the time, you know? It's like where we were, like, in our politically correctness, you know? Yeah. And, you know, I mean, I don't think any of, like, the cast would, like, film a lot of those scenes now, like, especially, like, when they talk about being gay and they'll say stuff like even in this episode, they always do that thing where it's like they won't say the word gay. They do, like, the maybe he's
something like, I don't play for that team or something like that.
Like, maybe he drives on the other side of the road.
Drives on the other side of the road. It's like, oh, like in London? Like, oh, God.
It's like, you can't say it, but you kind of can because it's so taboo. Like, the whole thing is just so, like, but, you know, it was in early 90s in the U.S. Yeah. And that's how we were about homosexuality at the time. Like, You know what I mean?
Yeah, same here, to be honest.
And like, I don't know, I think that the weird thing about Ross and Rachel is that they are kind of like a definitive TV couple. I think a lot of shows that have come after Friends have tried to kind of copy like the Ross and Rachel thing. They've tried to like hook their viewers in the way that the Friends producers were able to hook people for it. I mean, for us to have been invested in this relationship for 10 years is honestly fucking crazy.
But because their chemistry is so, they're like fated lovers.
They really are.
There's nothing, like, you want it so badly because there is no other option for them.
Yeah. It's like, you know that everything in between is just sort of like a placeholder.
Yeah, yeah, totally a placeholder. And I can't really think of many other shows where they've seamlessly is the wrong word, but like they've not whacked us over the head with it.
Yeah.
It's just like so obvious and subtle that they are madly in love.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's like, it's funny because it's a trope that's like as old as time, you know, like, the will they, won't they of a couple on a TV show is like the basis of literally so many sitcoms, but they just did it so well. And the fact that they didn't allow them to ever fully, they never like gave us what we really wanted.
No.
Until the last episode.
Yeah. Well, that's it. And even in series four. So in my mind, I was thinking of like big Ross and Rachel moments. And in series four, when Ross says Rachel at the altar instead of Emily, which saying I'm getting married next year and saying the wrong name at the altar is because of that show is like my biggest fear. But in my mind, it was like this big Ross and Rachel moment. Therefore, it must have been a big Ross and Rachel. Like series, but actually the whole series they're hardly together, that they're not a thing at all.
Yeah
And the culmination of that is only that one moment where he says her name, and the reason we're so invested is because of what that signifies rather than it actually being a big thing really in itself.
100%. Yeah, I mean, if you like, I don't know, montage like all the moments that they're actually like a couple in 10 years.
Oh, I watch those montages for this episode.
It's short, right? Like, it's not like they weren't really together that much at all.
No,
at all.
Not when you think about how many hours of television they created,
right?
And it's just little things that mean that they're thinking about one another, or that mean that there's inner turmoil, or there's just so many missed opportunities that could have been so much more. So you read into it way more than actually happened.
Yeah. I also too, I want to get your theory on this, but whenever I'm talking about Friends, mm-hmm. I always think it's worth mentioning that in my opinion, I don't know if everybody would agree with this, but I think that this show, if you really went back and watched it from the very first episode and watched it the entire way through, to me, I think that this show sort of revolves around Rachel.
Oh, yeah. I can see that because it starts off with her. She's the one who starts over her life again.
Yeah.
She's the one that
it's a story about her like finding, like through her friends. She's like the Carrie Bradshaw of the show. Like, it's like, through her friends, she's figuring out how to navigate like adulthood because she was so stunted by like her family. And like, she stumbles into this group, and it's like through all of these people, she figures out how to be like a whole person.
Yeah. And also it's her, she's the one, kind of her career progresses in a really linear way.
Mm-hmm.
She's the one who probably dates the most, like, we're as invested in her dating. And but then Monica, I don't know, I think Monica's also it's Monica and Rachel, but I guess Rachel is the main one.
I think that their friend group revolves around Monica.
Yeah, Yeah.
I think that Monica's like the one that is like,
well, she's the mother.
She's the mom of the group. Like, she's has individual relationships with each person that I think is more intense than they all. Not all of them, but like, not every single friend can say that they have a super intense relationship with everybody.
Yeah.
The way I think Monica does. Like, she's really involved in everybody's life in like a really intense way.
Yeah. Well, she's an organizer. She's a controller. So to have a part of the group that she wasn't in really involved in.
Yeah.
Would be like a counter to her nature, to her like core.
And I also think that in the aspect of like Rachel being like the show's sort of focus, I think obviously like all of the friends sort of teach her something about herself, but like I think Ross sort of teaches her how to like treat men and be treated by men in a way. Like throughout her like extreme dating history on the show, like she like has really coming of age moments with Ross as far as like how to be in a relationship and how to not be in a relationship. And you know what I mean?
I think Ross's expectations of Rachel are like her learning what to expect of herself as an adult.
Yeah.
So like he adores her so much, but he knows that she can be so much more than other people have ever expected her to be.
Yeah.
Until that point. And so his just pure love of her is exactly what she needs, I guess, to like become the full adult that she is.
Yeah, exactly. Yes, exactly. It's a show about her becoming an adult.
Oh, I love it.
Well, I guess we can kind of get into like the breakdown of the episode now if you want.
Yes, let's do that.
All right. So before we started recording, we were talking about how like, you know, obviously every sitcom has an A and B plot and Friends is no different. I mean, every episode is an A, B, sometimes like a really tiny, itty bitty little C plot that's like truly nothing. Like in this one, it's like Phoebe's boyfriend not wanting to sleep with her and then they sleep together and it's like, there's like two scenes of it. It's very weird.
Is there a need for it?
Added nothing to the, I was like, why is this in this episode?
Because it's like, whoa, wild. This woman wants to have sex.
Yeah, I know. She's like, why won't he give it to me? Everybody was like, ooh, oh my God. It's like so wild. But yeah, so there's an A and B plot in this episode. The A plot is that Ross and Rachel are sort of like mining their feelings about each other and like navigating this like weird tension that they've had since high school. And they finally come to terms with it. And the B plot is that Chandler got fat. So Monica's helping him lose weight, but she's too aggressive. And, you know.
Do you know what I thought when I watched this? I don't know how you are going through so many 90s stars and not getting body dysmorphia. Because the first thing I wrote down was, Monica so thin.
So thin. Like, I don't watch Friends religiously a lot, but like when you go back and revisit those old like Courtney Cox era 90s days where like thin was in, baby, 98 99, the more like rib bone the better, like it is very jarring.
It really is. I just think when I go back to watch Friends, I don't think I actually go back all that far, and I was taken aback by it.
It's like do you remember Ally McBeal?
Oh, I loved Ally McBeal. Because my sister is so much older than me, like that's the kind of stuff I got. I got dragged into watching Ally McBeal with the face bra and like
yeah, I love Ally McBeal. But do you remember like the political or not political, but like the politically incorrect like body talk around that era because of Calista Flockhart and Courtney Cox and just like all like Portia, the skinny gals. It was a crazy time.
And how thin Georgia gets in that show.
Yeah. Oh my God. It's insane.
Yeah.
It's insane. But yeah, so Courtney is, it was just weird. Like the whole episode revolves around her like obsessively working out with Chandler.
And he sweats through a jumper, which I was like, why have you not just taken the jumper off?
I know. It's such a classic 90s sitcom trope. Like, I sweated through a thick cotton
sweat.
It's like, what?
You just take it off.
Like, what's, I don't get it. But yeah, so the, and also I read online, and I mentioned to you this to you earlier, that like, this is the first episode that the producer saw potential in Chandler and Monica becoming a couple. And I didn't know that until after I watched the episode. And when I was watching it, I was like, are they dating this season? Like, they're so, there's so much chemistry between them.
They are, when they are like hitting each other outside of the,
yeah,
and just there's just that kind of, they're a little duo, because they don't, they, even though they are friends, they don't really have a friendship, just the two of them.
No, they don't.
So I do think they, it's a different type. I do. I think they're, like I was saying to you before, I think they're the steady type of love that you're, so like Ross and Rachel are the ones that you're, like, you want to be.
Mm-hmm.
But the kind of steady, invested in one another, like, contentedness of Monica and Chandler is what you should be. And I think that's clear kind of in this episode already.
That's like such a good, like, I love, that's such a good point. Ross and Rachel are, I have this term that I call, they're like an adrenaline couple. Like, yeah, they're like an endorphin couple. Like, cause you know, like, people get endorphins from fighting sometimes. Like, there are people who get like a high and their blood mm-hmm. rushes from fighting. It's like Lindsay Lohan disorder. It's like the drama makes you, it's like being high, you know?
Yeah.
And they're like very much like that couple that everybody knows or has, like, everybody's friends with a couple like that, where they're like, every day you never know if they're together or not. She's throwing his shit out the window. He's buying her a wedding ring the next day. It's like a whole thing.
And it doesn't really make sense, because it's like, because they're so in love.
Mm-hmm.
But I think with Ross and Rachel, it's kind of one step back from that, because some of it is like, oh, they're fighting. But a lot of it is like, oh, it's just they're missing the right time.
Yes. Yeah, there's like miscommunication constantly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And like, they're very, like, their friends are obviously very involved in their relationship. And like, that's super relatable to an endorphin couple like that, because they get,
you've got to hear about it.
Oh my God. Everybody is involved in it. Everybody know every detail. Did you already tell so-and-so this part? Okay, I'll tell you. Like, everybody's involved. And then you realize at a certain point, they love this shit.
Yeah.
I'm a pawn in this fucking game. I'm a part of their foreplay. You know what I mean? Like, this is,
I hate when a friend comes to you with like a problem and you're basically like, look, you need to end it. This needs to stop.
Yeah.
It's not good. It's not good for either of you. You both deserve better. And like, you go through that whole thing. You like draft out frigging texts. You're like, right, you're going to say this, or like, you're going to go around to his house in the morning because you're going to be dignified.
Yeah.
Hurt, but don't worry, you can come here, we'll go out for dinner. And then it's like, don't worry about it, babe, the next day, like, we're,
yeah, we're fine now, but
we're going to dance. Oh,
I'm like obsessed with him now. It's like, okay,
yeah, that actually is the God, am I gonna hate Ross and Rachel at the end of this?
I don't think so. Maybe. I don't know. I can't make any promises. So the episode starts with some like B plot goodness, where Chandler busts in the house and tells the group that he feels like, you know, people are looking through him and like women are attracted to him and he's disgusting. And Phoebe makes a comment about how depressed she feels when she gains weight. And he's like, wait, what?
Meanwhile, he is so much more attractive than I ever remember him being.
Can we talk for a second?
Okay, my second note, all more attractive than I remember.
Look, I had no idea that I was like truly, I guess maybe, of course I look back at my childhood and I'm like, of course I was lusting after these men. What fantasy world do you live in, sir? But my God, like, I can't even, I don't even know. I mean, between Joey, early Matt LeBlanc, are you kidding me?
It's like Titanic era Leonardo DiCaprio.
Oh my God, it really is. He has heartthrob everything. Heartthrob hair. He dresses like a heartthrob. He like is a bad boy with like a leather jacket over his shoulder. It is. Yeah. And I mean, all of them. David Schwimmer looks amazing. But yeah, Matthew Perry is.
We were gaslit about Chandler and Ross. I
kind of agree with you.
Because they were like, oh, like, Ross is such a nerd. And
exactly.
So goofy. But actually, they were like stone cold foxes.
Yeah.
We wouldn't have looked our way if we were like, hey, hi.
Oh my God. Especially like, you know, as this, it's funny because as the series progresses, like Chandler, Ross, like, gets hotter. And then yes. Joey starts off like fucking teen beat hot. And then he gets like weird looking at, like, he gets like, he's like the inventor of the dad bod before it was like chic.
Yeah, 100%.
You know? Yeah. But then Monica, who's like unemployed and like is single, like she just got broken up with, is in dire need of a project. So she decides that she's going to help Chandler lose weight and gain his confidence back. And I'm sure you can see where it's going. Type A Monica. Goes a little bit too hard. We get like a really classic like Friends montage of Monica and Chandler working out too hard, and Macho Man is playing in the background.
I was like, also they, what was so jarring to me was they were running, and they were running without headphones.
Oh, I know, just running through the street in New York.
I was like, excuse me, I'm running with your own thoughts.
It's like, what are you thinking?
You want to be alone with your own thoughts?
The fuck is wrong with you, psychopath? Also, can we talk about like the fact that as a child, I really thought that this was a truly hustling and bustling New York City. You could not tell me that this wasn't Manhattan. I was like, we are on West whatever in fucking Times Square. I thought it looked so real. Now it looks like Pee Wee's Playhouse.
I thought that not only was it New York, I thought like, wow, that's America. that's the whole of America.
Look at all the people. Like, it is the most unrealistic set I think I've ever seen on television. The street when they were running looked like foam. I felt like they were bouncing.
It did look like, but it looked like somebody had literally just come along and polished it a minute ago.
I was like, what? And there's like, you know, three or four like really cliche New Yorkers that walk by with like a baguette in their hand, or, you know, like,
and those like bins, those bins that have got like that are like wired mesh.
Yes.
And it's like, this is where we put all our rubbish in New York.
Yeah. This is a New York City trash can. It's hilarious. Like, and there's like steam coming from every
everywhere.
Everywhere in New York, there's constantly hustling steam coming up from every sewer. It's ridiculous. I love it, though.
Yeah, me too.
Actually, like, my apartment building behind it, I always say, like, it's like, I live in an apartment building that's three apartment buildings connected, and it's on a corner, so it's a triangle.
Oh, yeah.
And each side of the street has a different address, though it's one building, and then the middle of it is, like, this open triangle, and I always say that it looks like a movie set's idea of like New York. Like, it looks like Canada's New York.
Oh, right. Yeah, okay.
You know what I mean? It's very like, it just looks fake. It looks like a movie set. It just looks like a guy built a set to be like, New York City.
That's what, even though it was filmed in London, but London in Parent Trap is not the London I'm living in. Let me tell you.
Oh my God, I need to go back and rewatch. Wait, was it actually filmed in London?
I think so. There's a bit where she's in a taxi and it's going like, there she goes. And then she's like, going. I was like, you can't get road access past that part of London. Like, you have to walk. And like, no one is happy. No one's going to look at you in the eye. Like, And she's just going past and it's like, there she goes.
I feel like that's one of those movies that only, like, they probably filmed, like, two scenes actually in London and the rest was, like, in Colorado on a soundstage.
Yeah, probably.
You know what I mean?
Probably where it's more affordable to film.
Yeah. So in the next scene, they're at Central Perk and Ross is, like, making, he's making out with Julie, his girlfriend that he met on vacation. Was he on vacation? Why was he in China?
He was in China for, he got sent there to look at some bones.
Oh, of course, right. He's a nerd. Yeah. So Ross was sent to China to look at some bones and he brought back a girlfriend, Julie, and he and Julie are kissing in the front window and they're all sitting in there and watching them make out and Rachel's like very visibly affected by it. And telling the group that she's fine because she's got a date tonight with a guy.
It is almost slapsticky how annoyed she looks.
Oh my God. It was like, so much of Friends is slapsticky.
And I love it.
And I live. It's very, like, what's the word I'm looking for? Like, it's not like highbrow comedy in any sense of the imagination. Like,
It's that, what, I don't know what the actual word for it is, but you know when there's like a laugh track, but it's not, it's like it's to a live audience, and
right.
It's that kind of comedy that's like, it's hammed up a bit.
It's hammed up. That's the perfect way to describe it.
Yeah.
It's like hammed up, like, wah, wah, comedy. It's like slipping on a banana peel comedy.
Yeah.
So yeah, she's like very like visibly upset, and by that I mean like a true child star like crossing her arms and being like, "I'm grumpy." Like
I'm so like, sad.
Yeah, like she's Shirley Temple upset.
Yes. Those curls are just flying around.
And she's also like frantically carrying around a tray that has items glued down to it so that Jennifer Aniston can stop them.
Which like, is another thing that I used to, as a child, be like, they're so good. Like, they must have to go through so much training.
Yeah, like, she's not a good coffee server. There's, like, a giant coffee mug that she's basically holding upside down on the tray.
Yes, she can. I think she, like, almost throws it when she, like, leaves the coffee. Yeah. And she basically is just like, here.
Yes, to an extra who's like pretending to like flip through a magazine really frantically.
He's I know,
like,
best day of their life.
I love the extras and
stuff. I love the story of Gunther. Who?
Oh, I know.
Honestly, what a gig to get to be an extra and then be like, I'm a regular, and that paycheck.
On like the most successful sitcom in the history of television.
I know.
As an extra.
Exactly, with such bizarre hair.
Bizarre hair and, like, such a just a bizarre character in general. Like, Gunther was such a weird character that they wrote into the show.
Not in 2019. I don't think Gunther is making it in 2019.
No, not at all. So then Ross tells Monica that he's coming. Well, they come in. He and Julie come in. And he tells Monica that he is going to be stopping by her apartment to pick up some cat toys. Because he and Julie are going to be getting a cat together, and that sends Rachel into her full spiral.
No, she is totally within her rights to go into a spiral. I almost went into a spiral. It is insane to get a cat with somebody that you don't live with. You have to live together, and to get a cat when they've been going out for like 2 weeks.
I was actually going to ask you about this because I haven't watched the pre-episodes of this. Of this season, like, in years. Like, I didn't understand that. Like, that was so confusing to me. So they were just getting a cat together as a couple that was dating, like, newly?
They met the episode before. Either the episode before or 2 episodes before. And then she's like, the cat will stay at Ross's half the time and mine half the time.
Do you think we were supposed to think that was ridiculous, or was it supposed to feel normal?
I don't know. I think it's just emblematic. Oh, look at me using these.
Look at you.
I know. I've got a degree, don't you know? but it's just, I think it's emblematic of Ross's kind of all in. He just wants, all he wants so badly is to be in love. All he wants is to have that kind of marital bliss. And I think, like, the same way he gets engaged to Emily so quickly, like, it's just classic Ross to just be like, oh, we're gonna get a cat.
Yeah. Like, were obviously their relationships apart from each other were supposed to be like not great, or like I feel like in all of their relationships apart from each other, like they lean into like the worst qualities of themselves, you know, like he like moves way too fast with every girl that he meets and stuff, and like she's just sporadic and crazy, and she's a, you know, like a classic like pixie dream girl 90s, like doesn't know what she wants, manic pixie, blah blah blah. So yeah, I mean that kind of confused me, like this Julie thing, because I was like, is this supposed to be insane or am I just,
I don't, but it's so difficult because the way that they, I think it is supposed to be insane, but they are presenting it as though it's the most, you kind of don't know, because there are other relationships like Frank and I don't know her name, but like Phoebe's brother.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Like that's an insane relationship.
Yeah.
But yet it's kind of sweet, and we are like, oh, that it's presented as normal. So you kind of never know with the show whether or not they're gonna like be like, no, yeah, you're all right, this was insane, or whether it's gonna be like, ha ha, yes, it's insane, but they're in love.
Isn't it silly? So then in the next scene, we get Rachel's date, which was like, I thought was fucking hysterical.
I was like, I want to hang out with Rachel.
Like, I really, so I have this thing, and I think I've talked about this in this podcast before, I want to say, but like, I'm always really fascinated by how actors play drunk.
Oh, okay, go on.
Because I've always heard like actors say, like I'm inside the actor studio and stuff, they always talk about how playing drunk is like one of the hardest things you can do as an actor, to play like convincing drunk, because you can play so many different kinds of drunk if you think about it can comedic, it can be mean, it can be scary, I mean it can be like anything. So like to play like a convincing drunk person is really hard.
I think she was great.
I thought so too. I thought it was so funny. You know, it's like, I obviously, the elephant in the room is that I hate Jennifer Aniston, and everybody listening to this knows that, which is so dark. I know. It like really hurts people. It really rocks into their core. And I know that. And I don't like to affect people with it. But I always say that I only don't like Jennifer Aniston because of like other people. Like, I just think that what people project onto Jennifer Aniston is just too much. It's just like, we all need to calm down about Jennifer Aniston. We have to just evaluate the situation at face value.
Well, I think in terms of like beauty, she is, I mean, to me, like the most beautiful one on the show is Phoebe.
Me too.
I just think like she's just, like captivating.
Yeah.
And Rachel is bland.
Yeah.
And beige.
Mm-hmm.
So in that way, what I don't understand is Rachel fever.
Yeah, I mean, like, I'm like, is Jennifer Aniston gorgeous? Doy, of course. Yeah. But like, do I think that, like, I don't remember what year it was, and I've talked about this before too. People right now are fast forwarding, just, you know, like it triggers people. But I think it was like 2016 or something, or 2014. She was voted the most beautiful woman of all time.
No,
I just think people are like, I think people are fanatical about her in a way that's like they're told to be.
Yeah.
Like you're just told to like love Jennifer Aniston, so you just do it. But I say all that to say, the silver lining is that I actually do think that Jennifer Aniston is such a good like comedic actress, and I do think she's really funny, and she's got such good physical comedy. Like her physical comedy on the show of like jumping on people's backs and like chasing people around the table and like doing all those classic Friends things is great. And I thought that she was really good in this scene where she's supposed to be drunk.
When she says to him, you're being a bit weird about your phone, I was like, oh, shit.
I know.
So true. That's the kind of thing that you say when you're drunk.
And, like, also, like, the weirdness of, like, a person. Like, there's one guy in the restaurant that has a cell phone, so you have to be like, hey, sir, can I borrow your mobile phone?
Yeah, excuse me. I'll pay for it myself.
Yeah, I'll give you a couple dollars.
I was like, I don't even know how that would have worked.
Oh my god. She like hands him like a phone card. I don't even know. I don't know.
I don't know. In the olden days, how did it work?
So Jennifer or Rachel gets super, super drunk on this date, and she's like asking the guy, like continuously getting more and more drunk and asking him like how you move on from a previous relationship and like why she's not over him and why she feels this way and blah, blah, blah. It's like clearly going really bad. And she ends up using this guy's phone and the table behind her to call Ross and give him like a drunk dial, which was very relatable.
Oh yeah. I mean, it still is.
It's beyond. I used to be the prince of a drunk dial. Yeah. It was like my gig.
I used to, I think more like drunk texting now.
Mm-hmm.
I think like I would, so then the hard evidence would have to be there to face me in the morning. Like,
oh no, that's the worst.
I've only ever once had a drunk voicemail, and it was from my best friend who got really drunk, and we had a fight, I can't remember what about, and I got this voicemail in the morning, and it just said, "You can't be someone's best friend and then fall out with them," and that was it.
Oh my god, if I had a nickel for every time. I mean, honestly, like the amount of times, you know, I was never an emotional drunk dialer. I was always like, I want you to like listen to me be silly on the phone, like just truly narcissistic. Oh,
that's
and
fun.
You know what I mean, being like, listen to me, I'm drunk, and like expecting my friends to be like, oh what a gift, and like, you know what I mean, like this is gonna be so great listening to you like groan and burp and giggle, like yay.
what a gift, you know.
I mean, to be 21 again.
Oh, and no, I just would go and like boys' stuff that I fancied and like comment on their old Facebook pictures.
Oh, because you get internet bold for sure. Absolutely.
Yeah. Who did I think I was?
Yeah. And like back in the day, that was such a different thing. It's like now, if you go back to like 2013 on somebody's Instagram, it's like much more creepy than back in the day when you would like, you know, like an old picture of somebody on Facebook. Or like,
oh god, I'm just cringing because I can like put myself in that mindset that mm-hmm. I would do that, and then I'd be like, don't worry Rosie, I'm just setting you up for tomorrow. Like,
yeah, exactly. It's like, you're not strong enough to do this on the normal day, so I'm just god. Like helping you build the foundation of your future.
Oh jeez. I don't drink anymore, and I think that's why.
Honestly, like the fact that I do still drink is honestly insane. 21-year-old me is like, bitch, really?
That's still, right. Still some of us need to, you know?
Yeah.
Please carry that mantle for me.
And speaking of like drunk things and cliches, the next day, Rachel is, well,
she's
gorgeously hungover.
Yes. Isn't that an iconic look? I used to want like plaid pajamas, like that look specifically.
Oh, yeah.
Fucking my brain.
When I saw that, I had a visceral reaction. I felt it. I was like, wow, that is like, it's Rachel's like plaid pajama bottoms with like a crop top, like a blue sort of like cropped, like slouchy shirt.
Yeah.
And this is also, I mean, we can't go any further without mentioning that this is the year of the Rachel.
Oh, really?
This is peak the Rachel being a phenomenon in the, like just changing Mia Farrowing the fuck out of everybody's hair.
I mean, can you imagine though actually going into hairdressers and being like, I would like the, I mean, asking for like, oh, I want my hair like this, and mm-hmm. like makes sense to me, but going in and being like it's the same with now, people would be like, maybe not now, but in 2012, like, oh, I want the Kate for Kate.
Right. Mason. Yeah.
Like, can you imagine going in and saying such like a cringy,
no, and being like, I want it super choppy, lots of chunky highlights please,
and they'd be like, oh, I get what you're saying.
Yeah. Oh, you want the Rachel.
Yeah, you want the Rachel, but you don't go in and sit down and go, give me the Rachel.
It's the equivalent, I think, of now the way that girls want, like, long weave to the ass Kim Kardashian hair.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, every girl is going through, like, a 22-inch hair extension phase because of Kim.
And they look great.
You know? And not, like, calling it the Kim, but, like, you have Kim-inspired hair.
Yes.
You know?
Kim-inspired.
But, like, I don't know. It's just funny because in this scene, it's, like, they're using... And this is, like, why, as a kid watching this, like, I used to think the world was so black and white. There's context clues to show you that she's hungover. There's a bottle of Advil and a glass of water, and she's squinting, so she's drank too much. It's like,
yeah.
You know, it's sitcom talk. Yeah. It's sitcom talk for she drank last night.
What is Advil?
Advil is like, do you have aspirin? Do you like, yeah. It's like aspirin.
Paracetamol.
Oh no, what is that? Is it like, is that like a fizzy?
No, it's like, I think it's just like, you have a headache, you take paracetamol.
Mm-hmm. That's exactly what Advil is here.
Okay, so it's like, the same thing.
I'm hungover, I need an Advil. It's very
yeah. Okay, to me, I was just like, oh, she looks like she's just nursing herself and
yeah,
and being gorgeous.
Yeah, being absolutely stunningly beautiful while she nurses herself back to health. And another like classic Friends humor moment, like, so Ross is like, he shows up to get the cat toys, which, like, what is insane? I mean, it's like, could they not? It's like they just couldn't think of something else or something.
So they thought of the most bizarre thing to do it early on in a relationship. Like, surely they could have just been like, oh, I needed some like old school photos from when we were younger. Like, somebody right. would go to Monica's never had a cat.
Monica's never had a fucking cat, first and foremost. So, like, that's insane. And also, like, does Monica have some, like, crazy, like, she's Dyson brand cat toys? Like, what is it about Monica's, like, yarn ball that is so different? Like, that Ross, who lives in New York City, can't go buy some cat toys. He has to schedule an appointment.
For all the steam.
Too much street steam billowing through New York. It's like, he has to schedule an appointment to go to Monica's house to pick up a shoebox of strings.
Yeah, I mean,
it is the weirdest story. But Ross shows up to get the cat toys for him and he and Julie's cat. And Rachel's like, I feel like I had a dream about you last night or something. Like, I feel like, did I talk to you on the phone? And he's like, no, I didn't stay at home last night. And he's like, actually, do you care if I check my voicemail on this giant house phone? And so he checks his voicemail and she realizes that she drunk dialed him. And like, it's a classic Friends physical comedy moment where she runs and jumps on his back.
She, can you imagine being light as a feather?
Ugh.
So as to be able to, if I would put my boyfriend in hospital, if I put him in that way, he would be hospitalized.
I will say that if I was like a tiny, skinny little girl, like Jennifer Aniston, that's how I would flirt. Okay. I would be very like, hold me, and like jump on people's backs and like nuzzle.
Look how light I am.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. 100%. 100%. Like, I'd be like scheduling like dates to the beach so that I can be like carried along the sand, like, quickly. You know?
Yeah. Like, any reason to be lifted and yes. like look dainty.
Yeah.
Would be like my dream. So Ross gets super upset. Obviously, he's like really confused by it. And he says, and in the voicemail, she tells Ross that she's over him and that she's moved on. And he says, you're over me? You're over me? And then he goes, when were you under me? Because they haven't really had like a definitive conversation yet about liking right. each other.
He doesn't even know that she knows that he liked her.
Which, that was another thing that I completely forgotten about.
Yeah.
That he didn't know that she knew about his high school crush on her.
Oh, no, but not even, like, the high school one. Like, he had liked her for that whole year that she'd been back. And everybody, because I watched, like, the episodes around it, everybody was like, either move on or do something about it. He goes to China, they tell Rachel. Rachel goes to meet him.
Okay.
Rachel goes to meet him to be like, I like you too. And he's with Julie.
Oh, the cat and mouse of it all. Yeah,
I mean, like, our hearts can't cope.
Literally. Especially when you're 8.
Yeah, oh God, when I was 8. They were everything.
Our little hearts couldn't beat fast enough. But Rachel then confesses that, you know, while Ross was in China meeting Julie, that they had told her that he was in love with her or whatever, and that, you know, it's just like a whole fucking miscommunication thing. So then, like, they're going back and forth in the living room and, like, screaming at each other and, like, being super childish and being like, well, you liked me first. And she's like, well, you liked me first.
But I love it.
It's adorable. It's, like, very their relationship. Like, it's such a, like, teenage. It's almost like their relationship is crystallized in, like, their teenage high school years when they last, like, dealt with these emotions or whatever.
And I love that what they argue about is never whether or not they like each other.
Yeah.
It's always a timing issue or something they did, but it is never, I don't like you.
Yeah, exactly. It's never like mean or cruel.
No.
It's always like like you said, some sort of miscommunication.
I meant to ask, do you think they were on a break?
We were on a break. kind of, yeah. I mean, like, in the scope of, like, the relationship from beginning to end, yeah. Do you?
No. So I think that they didn't talk enough about it before he decided they were on a break.
Right, yeah.
So they just, like, they had one conversation. She was like, a break from us. And then he goes and sleeps with someone else. And I just think that isn't enough to constitute a break.
That's very true.
When they're like, their relationship deserves so much more than that.
That's very true. Given how long they'd known each other and like their history up to that point. That's true. We were on a break. I forgot about that being a thing too.
Yeah, that was, I mean, that is like such a, and somehow they managed to make it like this like funny catchphrase, something that actually is like really emotional in the show.
Yeah, it's something that resonates to the point that now like the cast of Vanderpump Rules is screaming it on vacation and thinking that they're being like clever.
Your face. You would think that they like, I don't know, like we're trying to take credit for breathing.
That's how I look all the time. So the episode ends with this super fucking iconic moment where Rachel's closing the coffee shop and Ross shows up to say that he didn't get the cat and that he's annoyed that he didn't get the cat because Rachel had to screw everything up. And he tells her that, you know, she had no right to tell him about her feelings and that it was selfish of her to do that. And they get into this like really massive fight about their miscommunication. And Rachel tells him that, that he could have told her that he liked her at any point that they've been hanging out every single day for a year now, because this is season 2. So they've literally been together every day for over a year.
Yeah.
My phone's ringing.
That's okay.
First of all, I have a house phone. First of all, do you have a house phone in your house?
I was about to say, no, I don't have a house. I do in my mum's house, but I don't in my house.
So I work remotely and it requires me to have a house phone and like, no, but like I don't use it. I don't even have like a real phone attached to it, but like it's only used for like telemarketers to call me.
Oh, interesting.
And say things like your social security number is in jeopardy unless you send us $4,000. My house phone just rang. It's very on brand. We're talking about Friends.
It is. I feel like I've been taken back. People used to do that thing in America. They did it here where they would like answer the phone and they would say the phone number. Like they'd be like, hi, this is 0161-882-0985. How can I help you? No.
Why did you like at stores?
No, like my mom would do that.
Really? She would say your phone number before she talked?
Yeah, before you talk. So you're like, oh yeah, I got the right number. Thanks. Hi, Mary.
Oh my God, no, that is so smart. And I did not know that was a thing.
Yeah, it's like old people do it now.
That is so, I'm going to start doing it. With my phone call.
Yeah, give it a go. I think it might throw people off a bit, but.
That is so funny. No, that was not a thing here.
Yeah, that was like a big thing.
Were you like a house phone gal? Like, did you spend a lot of time on the house phone when you were younger?
Yes, I used to get my boyfriends to ring me on the house phone. And then I would do this thing where we would go, okay, after, so I must have been 8, and we'd be like, after 3, we're gonna say who likes each other. And then we'd be like, I like you. Put the phone down. And then I'd be like to my mom, anytime I wasn't on the phone, I'd be like, don't pick up the phone because Joshua's gonna call me in 5 minutes.
Oh my God, so much of our like figuring out who we were as kids was spent on the fucking house phone, dude.
I know, and you knew all your friends' numbers.
By heart. I used to treat, this is actually really funny, my mom and I have an inside joke about this, but I used to treat our house phone like it was like my cell phone, like when cell phones had first come out. Well, not when they first came out, but when they first became like sort of common, like 98-ish.
Yeah.
And our house phone was like advanced, I'm using quote fingers, and it had like ringtones. But the ringtones were like, you know, all these like polyphonic, like free songs that you couldn't get sued for, like Happy Birthday, and like, and I would like set ringers for my friends. So like if my if Taylor called me, it would be like, I don't even know, like a 4th of July themed song or something. Like it was like so stupid.
I love that so much.
I mean, like, sorry, it's Desiree. She's calling me. Something's really important. And like an old like Western polyphonic song.
When you said that, I just imagined you like picking up the phone and on the end it just being someone being like, and I'm missing you.
Oh my God.
Like that's the only Desiree I know.
That was a really random name to throw out. That was like my best friend in kindergarten. Hey Desiree, shout out. Now you're listening, girl. But yeah, so she's cleaning, or they're fighting at Central Park, and he also makes the comment that he's been like suppressing feelings. She says, like, she makes this passive aggressive comment about him bottling up his feelings. And she's like, well, you didn't have to, like, you know, tell me that you like me or blah, 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 whatever. And he says, well, I've been suppressing how I feel about you since 9th grade, so I've gotten pretty good at it. Which is, like, super sad. It's, like, a very Ross thing to say, and it's very sad.
It is sad, but he's so invested in her.
And, like, he's clearly presented as, like, the good guy. He's, you know, Ross is, like, the good guy who, you know, fell in love with her, like, during, like, a really sweet time, and, like, that's never worn out, and he, you know, he, like, loves her like a teenage boy would love his crush.
Yeah. And so. But I guess it kind of is a bit weird because, yes, they've been friends for a year now, but they had, like, 10 years where they never saw each other.
I know, that is very strange.
And he still loves her.
It's really sad, but David Schwimmer plays a really good, endearing nerd, like, beyond. Oh,
yeah. I know, because he's so handsome.
Yeah, because he's hot.
That's why.
It's like, for some reason, he's really good at this role. So the next, he runs out the door. So he runs out and Rachel locks, she screams out the door like, well, now we have closure. And she slams the door shut and locks like 40 deadbolts.
She does 80 million.
Like half the episode was Rachel just locking locks. Like
I was like, is this a bit?
I thought so too.
No one in the audience was laughing, so I didn't know to laugh.
I was like waiting for one of those old timey like rails to come out of the ground to like press against the door, like an old like warehouse lock. I was like, why is there 43 locks going from the ceiling to the ground on the door at Central Park?
I know. How much money are they keeping in that till?
How much money are we talking here at the Perk? So next, one of the most iconic moments of the show's history for sure. Rachel goes over to the couch and she's crying and she's got her head in her hands and she's like weeping. And then she gets up and she turns around and Ross is outside standing in the rain.
Moping.
And he's like got his head pressed against the glass and they look at each other. And then she goes over to unlock the 37 locks and you just hear metals clanking. And then she can't like... So I actually read on IMDb that there's two versions of this moment where they cut out the lock bit. Because there is, like, a little moment where she can't get it open and he says, try the bottom lock.
Yeah.
I guess, like, in some versions they cut it out because they thought it didn't work, but, like, it leaked. There's some, I don't know, it's, like, a weird thing. Like, some streaming services have it, and then on TV they don't show it.
I like it with the locks.
I do, too.
We had to watch her lock them all, have some payoff.
It needs to be acknowledged.
Yeah.
That she
just have her flinging open. That otherwise, that's just insane.
Like she basically just used like a janitor's keys to like lock the doors, like a keychain that had 3,000 keys on it.
Yes.
So she can't get the door open, and he says, "Try the bottom one." And then she finally gets it open, and
they kiss,
and it's like, this is a moment that I remember as a kid. Like this is a television moment that I remember watching on NBC and being really affected by, because this was a major deal that they finally kissed, and like we thought that this is what the show was going to become, but they would be a couple for the rest of the show,
and then that would be it. And I think the show manages to recreate over and over again that same anytime they have a little while where they're together blissfully, but really like they do so well to recreate this over and over again.
It's very true, and they do it so well that we don't hate them for each other. Like in a lot of shows when they do it poorly, when they have the relationship stretched out for too long, or you feel like it's too much of a cat and mouse, or if they date too soon and then it ruins the dynamic. Like, did you ever watch New Girl?
Yes.
So you know when Jess and Nick finally start actually dating, the show gets, like, really bad?
Yeah.
Because they don't know what else to do.
Yeah, because it's kind of, oh, okay. Like, the purpose has been fulfilled.
Yeah. Like, the air is let out of the tires, and they're like, all right, so now what? Let's move on to something else, and there's, like, nothing else to, you know? They did a really good job of, like, not, and then you end up hating the characters because you're like, oh, fuck, they carry him big. Like, you hate Big because you're like, oh, my God, just fucking break up with him. He's terrible for you. He's horrible.
It's that thing with, like, with those couples where you're, like, really invested and you're like, okay, you're going to break up and you're going to, or whatever.
Right.
And then they don't and you're so annoyed. Somehow, they manage to not be that.
Yeah, they don't annoy you or beat you over the head with it.
Yeah.
With, like, the back and forth and the cat and mouse, and it's and they also
so subtle.
Yeah, it is very subtle, and they don't alienate their friends with it either.
No,
you know, they don't like divide the group really.
No, which I would actually like to take personal. My like personal accomplishments. One of them is I dated someone within my friendship group, and then we broke up, and then we had to stay in the same friendship group, and our friends used to take sides, and that is like one of my personal accomplishments of not making friends take sides, because you can't, like, when you're in that kind of friendship you just can't, otherwise
it's unfair, you know, it's just not fair. Did you guys stay friends? Were you guys like nice?
No, I took great pleasure in not inviting him to my wedding. but just because we're not friends doesn't mean we don't have the same friends, so we're just like cordial.
So all of you guys as mutual friends are coming?
Yeah, can't wait.
I love that.
Like, that was a real great time for me to send that invite.
I really love that for you.
Yeah, I loved it. It was like, I like text my mom because I told my mom when my mom hated him, and I sent her a text like, just sent everyone their invites.
Oh my god, so that means that he's gonna, you know, that means that he's gonna be on like Instagram and stuff seeing everybody have like these like milestone moments together, and he won't be there.
I know, and that's what he gets for actually genuinely being a terrible person. But that we digress.
Yeah.
Back. I made it about me. How did I do that?
Sometimes that happens to me every week. I don't know how. It's this weird thing that happens. I don't know. Well, do you have any, like, I don't know, closing thoughts about this couple or this show or whatever?
I just think that they are... I just think that they are like the typical, when we think of like fictional characters, they're like a larger than life couple,
mm-hmm.
that shouldn't work in real life, but on the screen where things can be tied up neatly and you can travel 10 years and you don't have to live every second.
Yeah.
They work just so perfectly.
Yeah.
And you don't get that in reality. Very few people get back together 10 years later because people are like vastly different people. Whereas this can be written so perfectly that they become vastly different people who are perfect for each other still.
That's very true. That's crazy. That's like a really weird thing to think about.
Which just doesn't, they couldn't happen in real life. They would have met other people.
They would have met other people, and their friends were so involved that they would have for 10 years, at a certain point, somebody would have been like, look. Like, Monica would have put her foot down.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Somebody would have been like, look.
Yeah, like,
stop fucking with my brother.
Yeah, 100%.
You know what I mean?
100%.
And stop fucking with my best friend.
Yeah, exactly. And she probably wouldn't have had fertility issues. She would have had 10 kids. And she would have been like, I'm managing this household. The last thing I need, Rachel, is you sleeping with my brother again.
Yeah. Do you think that... So my argument with Friends a lot of the times, and like, I mean, I don't like fault anybody who watches Friends a lot. I think that it's like a great show to rewatch. It's easy. It's quick. The episodes are fast. But there's something about... And I'm only saying this because I remember watching it when it was on TV and thinking like, that this was truly like cutting edge humor. And I will say that I do find myself mostly just like watching Friends. Yeah. Like when I like rewatch this, like the stories I mentioned before, like The Simpsons and like Seinfeld and stuff, I like belly laugh.
Yes. Okay. Yeah.
When I watch Friends, I enjoy myself, but I'm not like, I just watched this episode 5 times and I was never like keeled over.
Like howling. I watch it, I don't watch it to watch a comedy show. I watch it to feel comfort.
Exactly. I think that that's how most people feel about it.
Yeah, which is probably why people got so invested in the characters. It's because they are like a family. They're like wholesome.
Mm-hmm.
But you're more invested than finding it funny.
I 100% agree with you. And I think just generally, if you're of a certain age, there's like a cutoff of a specific age where like laugh track comedies just feel like home. Like it just feels like what a sitcom still should be, even though they don't work in like a new, like the new Fuller House is like horrendous.
Right. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah,
it's a bad show. But like, no matter what anybody wants to say,
yes. But
like the old Full House, because it's of the time, it just feels so comfortable to hear that laugh track. It's like to know when the beats are coming and to know when you're supposed to laugh. Like
you almost don't hear it.
You literally don't. You really don't
hear it now.
Yeah. Yeah. A young person is like jarred by it.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, but really? I think I'd hear it if it was on something new, something set now.
Right.
I would be like, whoa, what you, like, I would think it had, like, this deeper meaning behind, like, homage to the 90s.
Yes, yeah, like, some kind of, like, fucking tongue-in-cheek weird cheek?
Yeah.
Tongue-in-cheek?
Tongue-in-cheek, like a kind of, like, oh, we know we're doing, like, self-awareness.
Yeah.
No sincerity.
Right. Like, if like the thought of having a laugh track over, like, I don't know, like The Office or something would be so weird, you know?
Yeah, or Parks and Rec, like, so weird. Yeah,
a laugh track over, like, Leslie Knope saying stuff would be, like, the weirdest thing.
Oh, my God, though, I think if anyone deserves a laugh track, it's Leslie Knope.
Parks and Rec is one that a lot of people message me about, so, like, that's one that people have to look forward to.
Oh, that's a good one. I mean, I'll try and think of some more just because I think I love the... Honestly, like, when you said and Carrie and Big, like, when you were saying those things, I was like, oh, yes! I'm so glad! Yeah. I still want you to go down internet celebrity YouTubers, though. This is my...
Okay.
This is my petition to you.
Okay. So, like... That's, like, people like Trisha and Jason and stuff?
Yeah, 100%. Like, yeah. That's the... These are the celebrities of my life.
You know, that's... I have not done, a true Smushroom episode about anybody on YouTube, and I fucking follow Trisha and Jason, so that's a good idea.
I think that that's my petition, and I'm just using the platform I've been given for this one episode to...
Well, no, I would really like... I would love for you to come back on and do, like... Because you're, like, a historian as well, so I would love for you to come back on and do, like a traditional episode with me.
Oh, I would love that. That would be so exciting.
Okay, all right. Well, like, we'll, you know, we'll sit on it and, like, think about who you want to talk about. You won't have to, like,
decide. Let it marinate.
Yeah, let it marinate. Like, things could happen in the press. You never know.
Oh, okay, okay.
You know?
Yeah.
Well, this was super fun.
Thank you so much.
Oh, my God. You were the perfect first guest to do this.
Oh, yay. Thank you. We did it.
We did it. Good. I know. I think we kind of killed it, I'm not gonna lie.
I'm so do you think you're gonna do more fictional characters as you're, like, in between weeks?
Yeah, I'm gonna do these because this is easy, and, like, the normal episodes, as I'm sure you are fully know, like, how much work goes into researching, and, like, it's just with, like, a full-time job, like, it's just like I was, like, ready to pluck my little tiny hairs out
of
myself.
Not surprised. So, I did think, because you definitely, the research that you put in, it's so clear how much research goes into your episodes. So
it's a lot.
Hats off to you.
Thank you. So yeah, these are just easy and fun, and it's something that I can do to, like, give content still, but, like, it's fun, and it's like, not, it won't make me rip my hair out. So
yes, that's what we want. Please,
yes.
Don't.
Let's keep the... I'm already almost bald, so let's really keep what I have intact.
Yeah, you want it? Keep it.
Well, tell people where they can find you on the internet and your podcast and stuff.
So they can find It's History Bitch on all places where you find podcasts. We're on Instagram at Bitch It's History, and then I'm on Instagram as at Hungry Graduate, because I had just graduated when I and I was hungry.
I love that. I love a pure heart. That's a very pure statement.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much. I can't wait to have you back on. This was so fun. All right, well, I guess I will talk to you guys soon. I hope you guys enjoyed this episode, and I'll talk to you later.
Bye.
Bye. Thank you for listening to The Smush Room, an Emotionally Broken Psychos Patreon exclusive. Please make sure to head over to Apple Podcasts and subscribe, rate, and review. It really helps your boy. Also, make sure to head over to patreon.com/EBPsychos for more information on this show and other Patreon exclusive content. You can follow me on Twitter at Troy McEady. That's TROY. MCEADY. You can also follow this podcast at EBP_Smushroom. Thank you to executive producer Molly McAleer and coordinating producer Nicole Matthew.
Seeking the truth never gets old. Introducing June's Journey, the free-to-play mobile game that will immerse you in a thrilling murder mystery. Join June Parker as she uncovers hidden objects and clues to solve her sister's death in a beautifully illustrated world set in the roaring 20s. With new chapters added every week, the excitement never ends. Download June's Journey now on your Android or iOS device, or play on PC through Facebook Games.